Mr. Pop.
Views and opinions of this show do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of this network and its affiliates.
At Midwest IT Support Help Desk, we believe that technology should support and enhance your organization's success, not constrain it. With our wide range of best-in-class services, we provide customized solutions that fit your unique IT needs. We are committed to excelling at our job so you can focus on doing yours. Midwest IT Support Help Desk is always available, providing your organization with professional remote help desk support services you need. Midwest IT Support Help Desk will solve your technology issues day or night. Our IT staff ensures that your network and computers are up to date and ready for operation on a daily basis. Don't wait until problems occur. Let our organization solve them with our monitoring software, giving you the peace of mind you need. Let us do the worrying for you. Enabling your workforce with top-notch technologies isn't just important, but imperative for business success. This customizable solution allows your team to work seamlessly and collaboratively in a protected space. No matter what IT services you need, Midwest IT Support Help Desk will be there to support you every step of the way. Midwest IT Support Help Desk. We are committed to excelling at our job so you can focus on doing yours. Please visit www.midwestitsupport.com for more information or shoot us an email at helpdesk@midwestitsupport.com. Give us a call, 765-239-9668.
You are now listening to Two Guys in the Balcony with Ryan and Dan on RadioAFS.com.
Going on, everybody, and welcome back to another great episode and another week down of Two Guys in a Balcony right here on RadioAFS.com, Fat Boy Media, DRCP Army. I am Brian, and with me, as always, is my toe-stubbing buddy, Dan. What's going on, man?
What's going on, brother? It wasn't a toe-stub. I stepped on one of the cat's play balls. That sounded all wrong.
All right, so while Dan's hanging out balls over there with crushed cat balls between his toes.
Anyway, moving on, dick.
Well, I want to go ahead and throw this out there real quick because, you know, due to a technical issue, we do apologize to all of our listeners, but our show will only be 15 minutes live tonight. For some reason, there was a glitch. We've dealt with this before in the past. It happens. There's nothing we can do about it, so we do apologize. But, yes, most definitely, we will only be live for 15 minutes. And so make sure you guys go back and check out the rest of the show. Hit that link a little bit later, and you'll be able to listen to the last, you know, the last part of it. So this show will be about an hour and 15 minutes, but you'll only get to hear the first 15 minutes live. We do apologize about that. But, you know, we will be back with the same time as always next week too. So, yeah, I can't apologize enough because I hate when that happens.
Yeah. I mean, it's bullshit, and Brian, you and I both know that. But, hey, every once in a while, you know, Blog Talk likes to fuck with us and say, oh, no, you're not doing a two-hour live show tonight. You're only doing a 15-minute live show tonight, and you're just going to have to record the rest.
Yep. I hate when it happens, dude. I really do. I mean, there's nothing we can do about it. I mean, technical issues, it's electronics, shit's bound to happen. You know what I mean? But it sucks. There's nothing we can do about it. I guess that means we just got to hammer out what we can tonight.
Well, yeah, I mean, it doesn't take anything away from the show. We're still going to do the show. I mean, it may not be a full 3-hour show, ladies and gentlemen, but we're going to hit this show, we're going to hit it hard, and we're going to rock out. You know, we've got a couple callers on the line that we'll be getting to later on in the show, but like I said, we're going to hit it. We're going to hit it hard.
Well, and, you know, one of the things that I'm really excited about, Dan, for those of you who don't know, which is pretty much almost every single person that listens to us, we are working on something big right now, which is going to bring Dan and Brian live via Facebook as well. So you guys will be able to catch the show live on Facebook, and you'll be able to see the faces that were meant for radio.
True. I don't know if I'm sure everybody out there in Facebook land, or, you know, Two Guys in a Balcony land, want to actually see our ugly mugs.
No, probably not. But hey,
no, definitely
we'll
not.
We'll be there anyways. But you know, it's awesome, because if we don't want to show you our faces, or if Dan wants to pick his nose or whatever, that's fine, because we can just throw up some graphics.
I mean, this is true. This is true. So I'm actually looking forward to it. You know, Brian, you and I, we do, you know, Facebook Live video when we can. But this will give us a chance to actually feel like we're, you know, doing the show together.
Right. Well, not only that, but it's really exciting for me, and I know you feel the same way too, is, you know, when we do have our guests on this show, you know, and you look back at some of the guests that we've had, you know, when we've had Nick Palmisano and Mary Daig, and, you know, we've had quite a few guests
Carmen
on the
Moore
show. That,
and, oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, and we'll actually be able to have them if they're you know, interested in it, be able to actually call in. But not only will they be calling in, but we'll actually get to video chat with them too. So you'll actually get to see these people as well if it's something that, you know, they're interested in doing. So that's going to be awesome, you know, getting to that next level and moving on up, you know. And like I said, you know, you'll get to see the faces that are meant for radio.
Well, yours is. I mean, you know, I'm a fucking handsome devil. I don't know what.
I tell you what, Dan is mighty purdy with them with them cat balls smashed between his toes.
that's gonna be the running joke for the night, isn't it?
Yeah, but a good thing it's a short night, huh?
This is true, but I won't hear the end of it.
Anyways, no,
moving
you won't.
On from the cat's balls.
Oh, shit. Well, you want to kick it off, Dan?
Absolutely. Okay, so do you want to get right into the movie, or do you want to hit the callers first?
Well, I'll let you make that decision.
Well, how about we bring on our regular caller first?
All right.
Hello, you are live with Two Guys in a Balcony.
Hello.
Hello, Ms. D. May.
It's good to have your show late in the evening. Otherwise, I have no voice.
I was going to say, you're sounding really rough.
Yeah. Woke up the day after Thanksgiving with no voice.
Oh. It's because you were yelling at all the grandkids.
Do what?
I said it's because you were yelling at all the kids.
There weren't any kids here except one. Yeah.
Now, what is it? What is it, Dan? It's a. I'm sure D May already knows, but what is it? A cup of tea with a teaspoon or a tablespoon of honey, supposed to help with that with the throat.
And lemon.
Yeah.
Yes, honey and lemon.
Yeah.
But nothing's helping with it, so.
Sorry about that. I got a message that actually made me really laugh. Dan, why don't you explain to these listeners of ours the message that you just received?
Well, D-May, how was your Thanksgiving this year?
What was the message you just received?
It's hard to explain because it was a GIF or a GIF or however the fuck you pronounce it, GIF, whatever you, I don't know how you fucking pronounce it. And it is not appropriate for fucking radio right now.
Oh, it is. It's appropriate. And it's going to get posted. I'm going to go ahead and post this on our page for all of our listeners. Make sure you guys check us out on Facebook, on Twitter. You will be able to see this wonderful message that I just sent Dan And you know what, Dan? I think I'm going to do one better than this.
You're going to screenshot it, aren't you?
No, I'm not going to screenshot it. I'm going to make sure that I post it just like it is so that everybody gets the action of it. Oh, we're breaking up. But I'm going to send this to your wife so that we can bring her on and so she can explain this since Dan does not want to.
You're a dick.
So, without further ado, let's say hello to Dan's wife as well. Dan's wife, how you doing?
Doing good. How are you guys?
How'd you like the message I sent to Dan?
Nothing like wiggly feline balls.
She has such an elegant way of putting it.
Well, you know, my mama raised a lady.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Dan, I'm keeping my mouth shut. I ain't trying to sleep on the couch tonight.
You don't even, Ryan, he doesn't have to try. He sleeps on the couch all the time anyway.
Sometimes not even getting in trouble. I'll be sitting there watching TV, and next thing I know, it's, you know, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, and she's forcing me up to bed for an hour before I have to get up for work.
Yeah, might as well just leave you there to sleep, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, man. Oh, it's been a long day, buddy.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we lost D. May. She might be having issues with her phone or, you know.
She did not sound very good.
No.
Hope she gets to feeling better soon.
I hope so.
Yeah, she's been sound like that since Thanksgiving.
Rough. Said she ate too much and it messed up her vocal cords. It's crazy.
That's weird.
She was too busy screaming at the turkey, "Get in the oven! Get in the oven! We didn't eat."
You do realize that she's gonna kick your ass at some point, right? But before we go any further, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, we only have about 2 minutes left of our 15-minute live broadcast, thanks to blogtalkradio.com. But definitely make sure you go back and check out the rest of the show. You can find it anywhere. You can find it on Facebook. You can go to blogtalkradio.com/radioAFS, search for Two Guys in a Balcony. You can find the episode there. We are for free on iTunes. Go download iTunes, search for Two Guys in a Balcony, and all of our shows are there. Also, if you have a Android, download a podcast app, search for Two Guys in a Balcony, and that's where we're at. All for free. So, ladies and gentlemen, please make sure you go back and into the rest of the show tonight.
And we do apologize once again.
Yeah, we do apologize. Don't know what happened. We set it up like we normally do. And then all of a sudden, you know, like I said earlier, Blog Talk basically said, fuck you, you're doing 15 minutes live. So.
Yep.
Nice.
But it happens. So,
but we're going to go ahead and kick off the show. So, babe, it was lovely talking to you, even about cat balls.
Have a good show, guys.
Thanks. Have a good night. Oh, all right. Well, Dan, I'm going to go ahead and, if it's all right with you, I want to take a quick break real quick. And then when we get back, we're going to jump into the meat and taters of the show.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, with that being said, we will be back right after this.
How's it going?
What's up, man? Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. What's your name?
I go by Catagice.
All right. Hey, where are you from?
I'm from Spokane, Washington.
Okay, and as an artist, would you say that you are humble?
Yeah, of course. I like to talk about other topics, but I like to have fun too.
Could you give me an example?
Yeah, give me some. Let's see what we can do.
Okay.
I'm like an assassin with this passion. I'm smashing every distraction. I'm cutting this beat in half like a fraction. Caption this backspin. Every lyric gets you like an allergic reaction. I'm trying to be a legend like Lennon. Can you imagine? They're telling me to preach. I'll speak like Martin Luther. Everything I do is sick. Watch me maneuver through rumors. And then I'll super kick a lunatic if he's talking manure. I'm just trying to make disciples like I'm Larry Hoover. So how do I obtain motivation? Sustain and entertain the new and older generation. I got it. I will just exchange money and pay for liberation. And instead of the money, the guns, drugs, and fornication, I'll give inspiration. I know God has got my back, so I don't have to be nervous. I'll just purchase an urban surface that's worthless for Sunday service. And pray that they have a purpose for people who think they're worthless. Being tempted by the serpents, being pushed towards the furnaces.
American boy.
Man, that boy Katagice, he's going so hard just like a boulder. And he prays to God that boy's a soldier. Check his composure and your exposure, because he's making his number like a sick crossover. It's over, you're over. Cause everything is intellectual, technical, with professionals. And elite more antioxidants than most fruits and vegetables. The government is over criminals. They're the ones doing the crimes, taking away our human rights while I'm screaming. No pipeline, the streets release motion. A sweet disease potion, this preconceived notion will leave these bees broken. Enemies will retreat when I'm keeping the heat smoking. No guns, just verses, I'm keeping MCs choking. All you do is sit, get it past and hit it like a grand slam. But it's been frequently frequency so I can let the death jam. Rappers are paper thin, squeezing the flavor in their vapor pen. Give me 100 whack MCs, I'll wilt them like I'm Chamberlain.
I'm a creative genius.
Uncontrolled, unpredictable, and unabated. The most important topic will never start a war.
You ain't heard nothing yet.
Said you better be talking my name when you enter Spokane's conversation. Somebody better call Jay-Z, cause I'm about to rock nations. My rhymes align spines and redesign minds. And at the drop of a dime, they can redefine time. With motion and gravity, I study hip-hop's anatomy. This musical academy is tactically attached to me. Practically, everything I've been doing has come naturally. I'm Picasso inside of the gallery, cause I am a masterpiece. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm a genuine specimen. But I'll turn your skeleton inside your leatherman to gelatin. I know I'm just a rookie, but I hope to be a veteran. And I know I'm new like Orleans, but I'm flyer than that pelican. My mental capacity uses calculus calculators to calculate strategies to maneuver through tragedies. I need you to listen and pay attention to details. What's the difference between the beach and the streets? Nothing, you see shells.
All right, what's going on, everybody, and welcome back. If you're just now listening, then that just means that you went back and listened to the show. Unfortunately, we were cut down to a 15-minute live show tonight due to some kind of a glitch. That's just what we get when, you know, we vote Trump and, well, the network voted for the other guy.
Hey, look, don't, look, this is not political BS, all right? This is two guys
right.
in a balcony. This is not, not political BS.
So real quick, just to let y'all know, that was Something New by Katakai, straight out of Spokane, Washington. Make sure y'all check him out. He's all over Facebook, YouTube, everywhere. He's got some great music. Very young, talented guy. Very humble dude. I've gotten a chance to talk to him, get to know him a little bit. Guy is amazing. But anyways, Dan, show got cut short on the live segment, so I guess it's you and me right here. Time to take a trip to Halloween Town,
yes,
and
sir.
Talk some crazy, twisted shit by one of the most decorated, one of the most entertaining and twisted-minded, talented writers and directors of all time, one of the greats, Tim Burton. Now, granted, you know, everybody calls, you know, it's funny because this is one of the very few movies. You know, usually when somebody says it's so-and-so's movie, like Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
When you look at that, usually the movies that it says whose movie it is usually actually director's name first. You know what I mean?
Which oh, yeah.
I thought was – which actually threw me off, you know, the first time I ever found out that he wasn't the one that directed the movie. I mean, he wrote it, helped produce it, but – it was kind of like, wow, I thought he was the one that directed it. You know what I mean? But
I mean, that was my first thought when, you know, when the movie came out, and for a long time thereafter, I, you know, you don't really pay attention to the credits when you see Tim Burton. You know, I mean, it's like, who cares who directed Beetlejuice, or who cares who directed Corpse Bride? You know, I mean, it's Tim Burton's film. You know, it's the same as Eli Roth or Quentin Tarantino or, you know, any of them. It's their film. You don't care who directed it. So for a long time, I thought Tim Burton did direct this, you know, and then, you know, doing further research on it, turns out it was some guy named Henry Selick.
Right. So, and I'm sorry, Henry Selick, you're not as cool as Tom, so just get over yourself. Because you, sir, will never be able to hold the 70s porn stash like Tom Selick.
I mean, this
oh,
is true.
Oh, Magnum P.I.
Although, you know, Henry Selick did do some really good work. I mean, he's done Monkey Bone, Dungeons and the Giant Peach, Coraline, and of course, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas, which is just about his resume right there as a director. But he's done some good work, and I actually liked his work with Nightmare Before Christmas. He did a really good job directing it.
Oh, I agree. He really did a very good job. I mean, everybody that was in on this, you know, with Henry Selick and Tim Burton working together on this, they did a very, very good job.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it was... It was phenomenal. I mean, one of the craziest things about this movie, and you can see it later on in a lot of other Tim Burton's films, but because this movie came out in 1993, which makes it a fairly old movie. One of the things that caught me with this movie when it first came out, and even to this day, is the fact that it is stop motion. It is old school stop motion, where they take a picture, they move them a little bit, take another picture, move them a little bit. The stop motion photography and the stop motion action in this movie is so fluid that you don't even realize it's stop motion. When you think of stop motion, you think of, you know, like the old like Rudolph and all those from back in the 60s. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they're a little choppy, but that gives them their charm, but they're a little choppy. This one was just so fluid that it's hard to believe that it was stop motion. You know, I mean, looking at it from, you know, today's eyes, you would think it was all CGI.
Right, exactly.
And that's one of the things. That's one of the things that makes it so unique.
No, I absolutely agree with you on that, you know, and to be honest, I mean, I feel the same way about, I know it's not stop motion, but I feel the same way about about Robot Chicken, even being claymation, the way they do it. It's just something different, you know. I mean, we've seen claymation before, but it's not like the way Robot Chicken is. It's just they do something on a whole nother level. You know what I mean? Now
oh,
I know
yeah.
it's I know you know trying when people they're like, how the hell can you compare Robot Chicken claymation to the Nightmare Before Christmas stop motion? And it's like, well, not really comparing, but comparing at the same time. You know what I'm saying. They may not get it, but you get it.
Oh, I get it completely. I mean, you're talking about Robot Chicken with the claymation, and it still has that somewhat choppy feel because it's hard with clay. But it does it is kind of fluid, you know. I don't know. I'm sorry. I lost my train of thought. I was looking at something. I lost my train of thought. I apologize.
No, you're good. You're good. Recollect your thought.
But, I mean, it's it was fascinating to me when I, because I saw the making of, you know, in the documentary on this, on Nightmare Before Christmas, quite a years back, actually. I didn't get a chance to watch it this week. But it showed the way that they did the stop motion. It showed how they moved them, and it showed the different faces for Jack. And I mean, just for Jack, there were, I can't even remember. I know there was over 100 faces just for Jack. I mean, it was just crazy.
No, I agree. It, dude, they put a lot of work into this. A lot of work.
Oh yeah, and it's been, it has been such a classic since it came out. I mean, it's, everybody knows Nightmare Before Christmas. Everybody knows the Nightmare Before Christmas. My neighbor across the street, her 3-year-old is completely and totally obsessed with Jack Skellington. I love it. I love the fact that he is obsessed with Jack Skellington. My kids love Nightmare Before Christmas. It wouldn't be the holiday season if we did not watch Nightmare Before Christmas. It is that ingrained into our family and ingrained into society. You know, it is one of those holiday movies that you have to watch.
Right. No, I agree. It's like, well, for you, it's like for you, it's like watching it's like not watching Trick or Treat on Halloween. You have to watch it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You have to watch Trick or Treat on Halloween. You have to watch Rocky Horror Picture Show on Halloween. You have to watch Miracle on 34th Street, White Christmas. It's a Wonderful Life. You have to watch those during the Christmas season.
I was about to say, thank you. You named it.
Of course. I wasn't going to forget about it. But it's one of those that you have to watch. You have to watch during the Christmas season. You really do.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You really do. I mean, there's specific movies you have to watch on certain holidays. And, you know, you just have to. I mean, it's a given. If you don't watch any of these holiday movies on holidays, you know, it's like, what is Christmas without watching A Christmas Story?
Oh yeah.
You know, you're not American if you don't watch at least three types of classic Christmas movies while, you know, during the Christmas holiday.
Oh yeah, you got to watch the old black and white classics. You have to watch the claymation movies, and you have to watch the cartoons, claymation slash stop motion, and then you got to watch the cartoon classics, and this is right up there with them.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more on that, sir. But I'm gonna let you start. You know, dive into this. Let's. I know you're excited. We were really excited, and then we were like super excited, and then 15 minutes live. Thank you, Glitch. Now we're only excited. You took the super out of it.
Yeah, they did. They did. One of the things I'm going to start off with, and I thought about ending the show on this, but you know, since it's not a live show, I'm going to go ahead and start off with this. I'm going to go ahead and put this out there. Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. And if you disagree with me, I know you can't call in tonight. If you disagree with me, call in next week, 646-668-8467, and I'll be glad to debate it with you. Nightmare Before Christmas is a Christmas movie. I know there's a lot of people out there that say it's a Halloween movie, blah, 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 blah. You're wrong. You're full of shit. Nightmare Before Christmas is a Christmas movie. Period, point blank, plain and simple. Brian?
Oh, my bad. I thought you were still going. That's why I didn't say no.
I was waiting for your rebuttal, sir, because I know you talked about this before.
Well, no. I mean, I can't come back with that and say it's not, because it is. I mean, yes, it's set in Halloween Town. It's Halloween characters. You know, It's about the Halloween day, you know, the holiday and, you know, celebration. But it's about something more than that.
Well,
you know,
it's not about – the thing is it's not about the Halloween celebration.
Well, no, I know. That's
starts
what I'm saying.
The day
no.
after Halloween.
Well, no, what I'm saying is it's about they kick off and it's about the Halloween celebration because of the fact that they're already planning the next year. For them in Halloween Town and for the characters that are in it, it's all Halloween characters all in talking about the next Halloween celebration. And then they find out, oh, holy shit, Halloween is not the only holiday that exists. What is this? And, you like that? I threw that in there. What's this? But
what's this? I can't believe my eyes.
Danny,
I can't think as good as
so
Danny Elfman. I'm sorry.
But no, it's not about Halloween. I mean, in the very beginning, for them, it is. But the movie as a whole is a Christmas movie.
It is. It is. And again, you know, I know we can't have anybody calling in debate with us, which would. It'd be amazing if we could, but we can't, so sorry, at least not tonight. If you want to try and prove us wrong, we will definitely be glad to listen to you next week. We will set aside about 5 minutes, because that's about all it's going to take for us to prove you wrong, next week to call in and tell us why you think it's a Halloween movie. Again, the number is 646-668-8467 anyway. One of the things that I really didn't notice before until I really started sitting down. I actually sat down and watched it again last night. And I really took a look at it and really analyzed the movie. But one of the things that really got me was right there at the beginning. It starts off like a traditional Christmas movie, like the old, like Santa Claus is Coming to Town, Rudolph, Frosty, all those old Christmas classics that we watched as kids and that our parents watched as kids. It starts off with the narrator, you know, basically starting the movie, getting us started, getting us in there. And the way that they go about it is the way that Tim Burton wrote it is the exact same style as the old classic that we listen to or that we watch. I'm sorry. It's the rhyme and the rhythm and the words and the feeling you get when you listen or when you hear how they talk about or how they do the beginning. Am I making any sense at all?
Yes. I caught most of it. All I heard was cat balls, cat balls, cat balls. But I had to throw it at somebody.
Hey, you're going to be seeing my balls here in a minute if you don't shut up.
That's disgusting, sir. That's really disgusting. But no, you are making sense, believe it or not.
See, I was waiting for you to interrupt me. I was, you know, running round and round in circles there, and that's, you know, that's usually your cue for coming in and interrupting me and kind of, you know, putting me back on track. You know, I'm like a dog chasing a tail right now, or a cat chasing his balls. You know, I mean, you're supposed to catch me.
Well, I will say that one of the things that makes this movie stand out so much, though, I mean, not just the stop motion effect, but when this movie was done. And even before this movie, we can both agree that for years, Pixar has literally dominated animation. Pixar has dominated for movies for kids and adults. So for Tim Burton to write something that was so amazing and literally just did so well in a time where you've got something like Pixar just running the game, man. They are running the game.
The thing is, and it's funny that you mentioned that, because you and I both know that, you know, Pixar was owned by Disney for a little bit.
Right.
Right. Well, and this is actually one of those quirky little facts that you hear but you don't actually pick up on. Funny to say it, this is actually a Disney movie.
Well, yes, I know.
Okay.
It's a completely different feel from everything. Okay, and how many people do you know that would actually look at this and associate this with a Disney movie? Now
that depends. Okay, that actually depends. If you look at some of the old Disney cartoons, you look at some of the old, especially the old Halloween Disney cartoons that came out right after Steamboat Willie. I don't know if you remember it. There was one Halloween cartoon where it was a musical, as most Disney cartoons were back then. And you had the dancing skeletons. There was three skeletons and they were dancing.
Yeah. You remember that?
This is kind of a takeoff of that, which makes complete and total sense as to why Disney would put it out. Because it kind of has that same feel, kind of has the same older type Disney feel before they, you know, before they watered down Cinderella and Snow White and, you know, all those.
No, and you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But at the same time, Disney also took but think about it though too. Disney also did a major change. They did a complete 180 in their movies because they started aiming towards political correctness. And you know I'm right. Now, I'm not going to get too hardcore into political, but
yeah,
they went...
They completely screwed the pooch when they did Pocahontas, though.
Right, and this is all... And this started long before 1993, when this movie came out. So anybody that wants to argue that, if you're listening to it, like Dan said earlier, feel free to call in next week. You know, we'll have two shows on The Nightmare Before Christmas. But... Disney changed the way they did things. And, you know, so to turn around and to see Disney as the way they are and the way they do things. I mean, if you even compare something like Pixar movies to the way The Nightmare Before Christmas is, somebody's going to look at that and be like, there's no way that's a Disney movie. But, you know, they just kind of threw it in there. You know, they kind of slid it in there. And
It goes back to Disney's original feel of their movies.
That's right. Like they thawed out Walt Disney for his input on this, and then put him back in the freezer.
Shut up. Look, I'm drinking beer. What do you expect? The burp is bound to happen, you know, once in fucking 9 months that we've been on the air. But if you look at, like I was saying, if you look at the older Disney movies, even well into the 80s, like I said, with Escape from to Witch Mountain and, you know, some of the darker Disney. I mean, look at Dark Crystal, for God's sakes. Dark Crystal scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. And I know I'm not the only one. But then, you know, when Disney picked up Pixar and all that, it got to the happy, feely, joy, you know, type Disney movies that we all know and love today, like Little Mermaid and, you know, and all those, and Bambi and Snow White and blah, 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 blah. This movie felt like it took Disney back to its roots, back to where it started out. And I'm glad Disney picked up this movie. Because Disney has the money to back this type of film. for the length of time that it took to make this movie. Disney had still has the funds to promote the movie, and they're still promoting it to this day. You walk into any Disney store, and you're going to see Jack Skellington, and you're going to see Sally, and you're going to see Nightmare Before Christmas paraphernalia all over the place.
The only thing that you don't ever see is Pee-wee Herman standing there. Instead, they'll use the character that he voiced over because nobody wants to promote Pee-wee Herman in his movie theater.
I was really hoping you weren't going to touch that. I was really hoping you weren't going to touch Pee-wee Herman.
Yeah, and a lot of people in the movie theater were hoping that he wouldn't touch it either.
Oh my God, you're fucked in the head. I don't. Okay. Moving on to the movie. One of the things that got me, and Brian, maybe you can explain this. So the movie is about the Pumpkin King and his search for something that's going to fill the emptiness inside his heart. He thinks it's out there somewhere and blah, 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 blah. When we learn later on in the movie, it's actually Sally and, you know, they fall in love. And this is actually kind of a pseudo weird love story, if you will, because we find out that we can surmise that Sally has a crush on Jack, and Jack is spurning her advances until right there at the end, blah, 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 blah. There's your love story. And they kiss. Yay. Typical Disney movie. But, you know, he goes into the forest, which is kind of weird. Because he's walking through the forest. And, the thing that gets me is that he's walking through the forest and he somehow comes upon the doors. Now, wouldn't you think that he would walk through the Halloween door? How does he get out of Halloween Town if he doesn't come out of the Halloween tree? You know what I'm saying? I mean, how does... I understand it's a movie, and he has to find the forest, and he has to find the trees. But when you see him open the Christmas Town tree, and you see him open the Christmas tree, and you see him fall down, you see that he goes through this magic little portal-type thing. So where was the magic little portal-type thing when he was walking through the forest? I mean, does every... one of those towns, is Turkey Town, is Easter Town, Christmas Town. Do they all have those forests that link? And when you go through the door, you magically transfer to the center of the town?
Right. And then at the same time, how the hell do you find the door to get back if you're right in the center?
Yeah. Do you have to walk through the forest? I mean, that would be fucking scary in Easter Town. You know, you fall down into Easter Town and you've got all these bunnies jumping around and eggs and everything. And now you got to go tromp through this creepy forest to get back to these magical trees. I mean, that's a long way. I mean, he was walking for, you know, quite a bit. He was walking
especially for at least a few days. Right. Especially if it's like one of those rabbits from Monty Python. You know, that's a scary looking rabbit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got sharp, pointy teeth. It's called fangs.
But, well, in that, you know, part of the, you know, we've seen so many movies where they leave unanswered questions, you know, like that. And they leave something for the imagination. But, you know, and I think that's one of the things that Tim Burton does really well, too, is there's always something, even something so simple, like where the hell's the door to get back? How did he get back? How did he find the door? You know, so it's kind of one of those things where it's like,
how did he get back? Okay. You're mentioning that, and I hate to cut you off, but you're on a path that I want to go down. How did he get from Christmas Town to Halloween Town?
Right.
Did he drive through the forest, open the door to Halloween Town, the big old pumpkin, and shove his fucking sleigh through there?
But at the same time, how would he even know that the door was in the woods? Because, yeah, it was
because
in the woods for Halloween Town. Right, but he was in the – no, but see, the thing is, though, he went through the door in Halloween Town to get into Christmas Town, but how do we know that the door –
But he didn't go through the door in Halloween Town. He walked through the forest to get to the trees, and he opened the door for Christmas Town and fell in. He got sucked in.
Right, that's what I'm saying, but how does he know that the doors would be in the forest of Christmas Town? See what I'm saying? It's like you have to find the door. So how is he? I mean, he's been in Halloween Town.
Are they are all the forests linked together? And if that's
right,
the case, why do you need the doors?
Well, not only that, but then there stems another question. How many years has this guy been around? How many years has this guy been alive? And how many years has he lived in Halloween Town? Which is obviously his whole life. And you're just now finding these doors. These doors have never been discovered before up until this one moment.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's ever been exploring. I mean, Sally likes to get out all the time.
Right.
You know, I mean, did she never go exploring? Did nobody ever explore those woods? Did nobody ever see those woods? And I mean, I know we're overanalyzing the situation,
and
but
you
this
guys,
is what we do.
Not only that, but we got the Halloween Town version of Bebe's kids running around this show. You tell me they never found the damn doors either?
Yeah. I mean, do they just go back to Oogie Boogie and stay there? No, these kids are little rotten shits. You know, I mean, kind of like everybody else's kids. They're little rotten shits.
If I was Jack, I would have kicked him through another damn door and would have locked that shit.
But he likes the kids. He likes the kids.
Well, I'm just saying, if I was Jack, I would have kicked them damn little shitheads through the door.
And speaking of the kids, so Jack gives them the special mission to go and, you know, kidnap Santa Claus. You know, I mean, they sing a whole song about it. Kidnapping Santa Claus, la, 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 la. You know what I mean?
Right.
Okay, so it takes them roughly, we'll give them a couple hours to find the bunny rabbit, which is more than, you know, just more what we could say about fucking Elmer Fudd. It took them a couple hours to capture the Easter Bunny. But if you look at the timeline from when they go to return the Easter Bunny to when they bring back Santa Claus, if you look at the timeline that spans, it's 33 days. It took them over a month to capture Santa Claus. So what you're telling me is that it takes them, we'll give them 4 hours, per se. 4 hours to catch a rabbit, a little hippity-hoppity bunny, and it takes them 33 days to capture a fat man? How does any of this make sense? How does any of this make sense? I mean, hell, it takes 5 minutes for my kids to catch one of the cats, and it takes them 30 seconds to catch me, and I'm an old fat man. How does it take them over a month? And why doesn't Jack question this? I mean, it's because I looked at that last night when I watched the movie, and I'm like, wait a minute. They started out, and it was like 50-some days. Like 57 days. And then when they came back, there was 24.
I never really thought about that,
though. Yeah, it's a difference of 33 days.
I never really paid any attention to the dates.
Yeah. It took them 33 fucking days to capture Santa Claus. I could capture Santa Claus with my camera and 30 seconds to show my kids.
Maybe they're scared of the elves because, you know, elves are kind of creepy shits.
They're fucking trick-or-treaters, dude. They are the most mischievous little shits. They captured a bunny rabbit in 4 hours.
But you're talking about elves for Christmas with nothing but like magical shit. They can make they make deer fly. Okay, so
bunny rabbit, sharp, pointy teeth, fangs.
No. Magic in the Christmas time thing.
So you're talking about the whole time lapse thing? Is that what you're trying to say?
I'm just saying. I mean, they got magical shit going on in Christmas.
They got magical shit going on in fucking Easter Town. They got magical shit going on in Halloween Town.
I'm just saying that's magical.
And
they have elves. Elves are creepy, dude. Let's be honest. Elves are creepy.
No, they're not. They're not fucking Oompa Loompas. They're elves. They're happy, joyous, little bell-wearing, little green flippy toe thingy, you know, fucking building toys, bullshit little shitheads. That's all they are. They're not scary. They couldn't melt a snowflake without crying. Talk about elves being scary and fucking... No! 33 days to capture Santa Claus.
Well,
all they had to do was wait till the fat ass was asleep, throw him in a bag and take him. Look, does this rag smell like chloroform, motherfucker? There you go.
Does it smell like chloroform? Oh, my God.
33 days to capture Santa Claus.
Chloroform. So are you going to completely ignore the fact that I brought up Pee-wee Herman earlier?
Oh, I'm not touching Pee-wee Herman. That's all you.
Well,
although he did play a very good bit part in this movie. I mean, he played Locke, who's, I mean, not really.
One of the things that I found really interesting about this, though, is the fact of how long it took to make this movie. You know, when you think stop motion and everything, it's kind of like one of those. I mean, it's one of those. You'll take it as, you know, everybody's gonna look at it a little differently. And like, okay, well, what is stop motion? And then you start to question it. Like, okay, and then you kind of make up your own. You know, you kind of come up with your own conclusion of what exactly it is or what they go through to do that. But just to make you guys let you guys understand how this movie was created, it took over 100 people 3 years to make this one movie of an hour and a half long. Or I don't even think it was an hour and a half. It was what, an hour and 20 minutes, something like that, hour and 15, Dan, something like that. But
something like that.
For 1 second worth of film, they had to use up to 12 stop-motion moves just for 1 second of film. 12 stop-motion moves had to be made for 1 second worth of film.
And that's
patience.
And that goes back to, oh yeah, massive fucking patience. Patience I definitely don't have, that's for sure. But that goes back to what I was saying as to, you know, how fluid this movie was. I mean, you were saying it earlier. You were just saying it. It took 3 years for them to make this movie. For them to make an hour and 20 minutes. But
right,
their attention to detail in this movie was absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
Well,
I mean...
And sadly enough, I think one of the things that I would have... This is one of those things where, you know, you and I would have been completely little giddy little schoolgirls over this. But Vincent Price was originally the cast for Santa Claus.
Yes.
But due to the fact that, you know, his wife passing away and his, you know, his health went downhill after that, he just couldn't do it. So, you know, his he tried, but due to his health, you know, his voice, it was just they couldn't use it. They said, sorry, but, you know, you're just your voice is gone. You know, but that would have been amazing to hear Vincent Price's voice as Santa Claus on this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Real quick. I don't know if you saw it or not. I'm pretty sure you did. The movie. And you reminded me because you were just talking about Vincent Price. The movie was originally inspired by a poem that Tim Burton had wrote.
Yes,
and I posted
it
up on our Facebook page. Oh, okay.
I actually have it open.
Awesome. Yeah, because I posted it up on our Facebook page at the beginning of the week. The video that is shown is actually voiced by Vincent Price.
Right.
So you can actually say that Vincent Price did have something to do with Nightmare Before Christmas. Even though he wasn't in the movie, he did the voiceover for the, I think it was 10 minutes. I think it is. He did the voiceover for the 10-minute poem, little short that Tim Burton did before he did the full-length stop-motion feature.
Right.
So, I mean, I watched the poem, and I mean, it's phenomenal. It really is. And I'm glad Vincent Price did get to play somewhat of a part in Nightmare Before Christmas, because this movie is right up his alley. I mean, this is what Vincent Price is right here. Nightmare Before Christmas. Vincent Price would, and having Vincent Price playing Santa Claus, that would have been just over the top amazing.
Oh yeah. Hands down. I couldn't agree with you more, you know, and, also, another thing that I thought was, you know, interesting, well, and I noticed, you know, reading it when you were talking about the poem, was that, you know, the only characters that are in the poem are Jack, Zero, and Santa.
Yeah.
Those are the only characters that are mentioned in the poem, you know, and it was kind of like Tim Burton, you know, it's like he knew what he was doing, but at the same time, it was like he had those three characters down, but where did he want to go with it? You know what I mean? And
yeah.
That actually raises a question. You know, we were talking earlier about, you know, leaving things out for the creativity and the imaginative mind. Was it Tim Burton that did it, or was it he didn't really know where he wanted to go with it, had a different idea, whatever. But then, you know, studios and like to put their fingers in things and add things, take things out. So it's kind of like how much actually was taken from this,
but
or
how
added
many,
to it? How much was changed from Tim Burton's original idea?
Even Disney. How many studios are going to say to Tim Burton, yeah, we like where you're going with this, but we're not going to make the movie unless you go this way.
Right.
How many studios are going to say that? Because, if you've got Fox that says that to Tim Burton, Tim Burton's going to be like, fuck you, Fox. I'll go to Universal. They'll do it my way.
Right.
Because if one studio turns Tim Burton down, another studio is going to pick him up and be like, hey, we'll take you. We know what you're capable of. We'll take you. You do whatever you want as long as it's, you know, not really far, far out there. But we know your work. We like your work. We're going to give you the ability to do what you want. You know, we're going to give you that creative – what's the word I'm looking for? I just lost it. We're going to give you that ability. So, as far as this movie goes, because there was a couple different writers and that were involved with this. I mean, you had Tim Burton, who, you know, as we know, did the story and the characters.
You had Michael McDowell, which did the adaptation for it. Then you had Caroline Thompson, who did the screenplay. So as it goes from Tim Burton to Michael to Caroline, you know there were some changes in there. But I highly doubt that when Caroline or when Michael said, let's change this, and Tim Burton said no, they said, well, we're going to do it anyway. You know what I mean? So I'm pretty sure, you know, Tim had a hand in the entire process. But, you know, I mean, Caroline may be a better screenplay writer than Tim is. You know, Tim's a wonderful storyteller. Tim is an amazing storyteller. But, you know, every once in a while he needs his stories to be adapted and changed so that they can be put up on the big screen. And that's what, you know, Michael and Caroline were there to do.
Right. And that, well, and another thing I'm glad that they did was, you know, I know that Tim Burton had at one point was considering making this a TV movie, a TV special. And
yeah.
You know, and
it wouldn't have been
instead of right, and instead of making it a TV special and it going to a feature film, I think it, you know, it really did wonders because, I mean, look at and I'll go to something that was a TV special, one of our favorites that we've actually talked about recently on the show. Look at It. Look what Tim Curry did with It, or Tim, not Tim Curry. I'm sorry. Look at what Stephen King did with It. As a TV special, it was still amazing. But imagine what Stephen King would have done with that had it been a full length feature film. You know,
oh, yeah.
So I mean, the we see what Stephen King can do with a TV special, and we see what Tim Burton can do with a full feature film. Imagine what it would have been like, and then imagine the downplay on this had it been a TV special. You know what I mean? It's one of those weird things. Like, no, I agree with you. You know, and I don't. One of the things I disagree with too is, you know, we were talking about Disney earlier, and yes, it's a Disney film, but they, you know, I don't like how they decided it was too dark for children, so let's go ahead and not put it on the whole Disney animated canon, and let's put it under our lower named company, you know, and we'll go that way because.
Yeah, it's funny because they did that, and then the movie was a huge success, and now they're claiming credit for it. Because
right.
Now if you go and you go buy the Blu-ray, you go buy the DVD, Disney is bam, right there. Earlier, it is all over their stores. You walk into a Disney store, especially during either Halloween or Christmas season, and what do you have in your face other than Marvel and Star Wars, of course? You've got Nightmare Before Christmas.
Right.
You know,
and well, it's one of those things. They realize it's a cash cow, and so they wanted to go ahead and put it out that, hey, this is us.
Yeah, but they didn't want to do it to begin with.
Well, and it kind of, you know, there's only one other movie that are actually labeled under Touchstone Pictures that are considered official Disney films. Do you know what that other movie is? It's one of my all-time favorites.
I actually cannot think of it right off the top of my head. I bet you I'd know what it is. As soon as you say it, I'm going to go, oh, hell yeah. I just can't think of it off the top of my head right now.
Patty cake, patty cake, patty cake.
Yes. Yes, that's right. I had completely forgotten about that. Fucking Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Love that movie, dude. That movie's awesome.
Yep. It was released under Touchstone Pictures, but as soon as it became a huge hit, it's like, oh yeah, Disney, we did it. Yay. No, you motherfuckers. Okay. Anyway.
You know, And I'd like to put out there, you know, everybody wants to claim, you know, that they're being left out of things and this and that. I just want to – okay. Name the holiday lands that are in the film, Dan.
Okay, you've got Thanksgiving, Easter,
okay.
Christmas, Halloween, of course. And if I'm not mistaken, and I probably no, I don't remember saying that. I know which one you're talking about, and I thought I saw a door for it, but I don't think it's there. Are you talking about Hanukkah?
Nope, that's not on there. They have 4th of July, Halloween, Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter, St. Patrick's Day, and Valentine's Day. But why not have Cinco de Mayo?
Seriously, dude.
We can't leave out
about,
Cinco de Mayo.
What is it? Dios de la Muerta. I don't know if I said the first one right. Day of the Dead. That's what they do.
That works too.
Anyway.
What about our birthdays?
I mean, those are the most important holidays of all, yours and mine.
That's all right. Well, Dan didn't mention his wife. She's on the couch tonight, ladies and gentlemen.
You know what? I'm used to it by now.
You can come
okay,
up
so...
with your cat balls.
Fuck you. Okay, so you know how I mentioned...
Oh.
Okay. We kind of just jumped in there together. You know how I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the show when I was talking about the stop motion features and stuff like that, how it was reminiscent of
yes.
A lot of the older ones that we used to watch. Tim Burton actually admits that the Christmas specials from the company Rankin Bass, which did all of those old Christmas specials, the Grinch, Frosty, Rudolph, you know, Santa Claus Coming to Town, The Story of Santa Claus, all of those, they were actually a big influence on this movie. And like I said earlier, you can see it. You can see it in the way that they started. Because if you look at, like, Grinch, How the Grinch Stole Christmas and Frosty, the snowman, you have Boris Karloff who does the introduction. And I think he also does Santa Claus is Coming to Town. I may be wrong. I'm not sure. But the narrator at the beginning of Nightmare Before Christmas, and I don't remember offhand who that was, actually sounded a lot like Boris Karloff. Had the same type of voice, had the same inflections. And you can see the influence in this movie from the past Christmas specials. You know, and I touched on that earlier, and I'm not going to go into it too much. But and you can see it throughout the entire movie. I mean, there's a lot of musical numbers in this movie. Just like, you know, in Rudolph and Frosty and all that, there was a lot of musical numbers. Which leads me to my next question for you, Brian. What type of movie is this classified as? Is this a musical? Is it a rock opera? Is it, you know, because of the amount of musical numbers in the movie, what is it classified as? Because you have musicals like The Sound of Music, then you have rock operas like Rock Picture Show and Repo the Genetic Opera.
Right, right. Well, I mean, that's, I don't know. I mean, I think this kind of fits. I'd honestly have to say this kind of fits right in the middle of it. Could it's kind of like an opinionated way of looking at it. You know what I mean? Like it could be a musical. It could be a rock opera. I mean, it just depends on, I guess, the style that you prefer, because it kind of fits right in the middle of everything in a sense.
It kind of does.
It's a cult classic. This is a cult classic movie that is done.
It's a cult classic, to be
honest
with you.
But at the same time,
it's not like the Rocky Horror Picture Show. You know, I mean, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, you either love it or you hate it. The old one I'm talking about, I'm not talking about this new fucking piece of shit that they came out with.
I mean, at the same time, I mean, it is actually considered a cult movie. Because it had done so well and had so many years of success, it actually has achieved the ranks of a cult film. So, I mean, granted, you know, I mean, they don't look, I mean, Hollywood don't look at it like that. They just look at it like, okay, once it hits a certain number of sales, it can be considered a cult film, you know, once it hits that level of popularity. But this
That's not how true movie buffs look at things, though. You know what I mean?
But
I mean, cult classics are movies.
No, and I won't say, I won't go as far
Evil
as
Dead
saying
is
cult
a cult
classic. Right, but I won't go as far as saying cult classic. I will correct myself, but it is a cult film. It has achieved that rank, and I will give it that because it has. It has. Tim Burton did something with this movie that nobody else will ever touch. And thank God he was willing to step up and say something and veered Disney away, because Disney wanted to do a remake. Not a remake, I'm sorry, but Disney wanted to do a sequel to this. They wanted to do another part. And Tim Burton said no. And they're talking about, well, we could have him where he goes to Thanksgiving. He could go to Easter, and we don't need to sell that, okay? Halloween to Christmas, the two big holidays of the year.
Yeah.
When you look at a financial gain aspect for companies, Christmas and
Halloween,
yes. Two of the biggest, most.
And they are the two biggest holidays that people look forward to. You know, you've got people like me who absolutely love Halloween. You know,
except
I'm horrible
to
my
that they didn't put in the movie.
What's that?
Except for Cinco de Mayo that they didn't put in the movie.
I mean, this is true, but, you know, any excuse to drink a beer. I mean, I'll drink a beer on Halloween.
Exactly. But real quick, man, we do got to get down, man. It's the last minute and a half of the show, 2 minutes to go. This sucks because we could have seriously went in so far this. And
we could have easily done 4 or 5 hours on this movie. Beginning to end.
There's
much more that I know you wanted to talk about. There's so much more I wanted to talk about.
And I did, because there's so much that Tim Burton did with this movie, and there's so much of an impact that this film made. But real quick, we got down to about a minute and a half left. You want to real quick let them know what we're doing next week, and then we'll go ahead and say our goodbyes. He don't remember what we're doing next week, ladies and gentlemen.
I've got it on my calendar on my phone.
We're going to be doing some Christmas horror movies next week.
Right.
And we'll be talking about rare exports and Krampus and rare exports and Krampus. And we're going to be talking possibly one or two more. Not sure yet, but those are two movies we will be definitely doing. You're welcome for that, Dan, by the way.
Thank you for saving my ass on that.
But most definitely, it's been an honor talking to you guys tonight, but you didn't hear us yet. So, hey, you know, tune in, check it out, and we will catch you guys next week. Thanks for listening for the whole 13 to 15 minutes that you did catch. And, that's about it, man. It cut short and just threw me off. Say your goodbyes and let's go, Danny boy.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is definitely a movie we will be revisiting at some point. Brian and I both love this movie. We can talk this movie for hours. As a matter of fact, him and I have. There are good and bad points about this movie that we didn't get to hit on.